Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Sarah. It's Samantha here again from Penguin Book Writers. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Okay. All right. So, Sarah, I have already processed your request to the finance department. I'm just waiting for them to provide the conversation once the amount has been processed, okay?
Okay.
All right. Secondly, I have the head of the writing team with me, the bestseller that was assigned on your project along with the team. So if it's okay, I can connect you to her. She already went through your brief form, and she's very excited to have a word with you.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Stay on the line, please. Hello? Hello?
How are you?
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hey, Sarah, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for asking. You're talking to Rachel Thomas, your assigned writer. So how are things at your end?
Oh, doesn't really matter. Thanks.
Why? What happened? Was it a rough day today?
It's been a rough 2 months. It's been rough, yeah. It's been rough for a while.
Well, always keep in mind there's always a silver lining, so it's a rough patch, but things will get better.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope
well,
so. I hope you're right.
Yes, yeah, things are good over here. It's just busy, busy, busy. I came specially for you today so that I can talk to you. And I believe there was some miscommunication and everything. And, you know, I hope it's sorted because I'm really excited to go ahead and work on your book. So before we move forward, I would like to, you know, ask you a couple of questions while going over your brief form and everything. But before anything else, Sarah, the first thing that I would like to know as your writer is that, can you tell me the purpose or the vision, or if in a very layman language I say, what's the goal behind writing this book?
To sell a book about a story.
Mm-hmm. It's a memoir, correct?
Yes, and I wanted to be, you know, I just wanted to document what has occurred. And I don't know, maybe go from there. I don't know yet. I'm not sure how it will pan out. I really don't.
Mm-hmm. All right. See, I will also ask another question. I would like to know if this is the first ever book you're working on, or have you ever published anything previously as well?
No, never have. Always wanted to, but never have.
There was a break in the line. Can you please repeat?
I said, no, I never have, but I've always wanted to, but I never have.
Well,
life's
no problem.
Just gotten in the way.
Well, no problem at all. We're here to assist you, and I will make sure that this process is as easy as possible. So before I get into the depth of it, I would like you to know what you should expect and how things will move forward. So basically, the way I work is that we are doing ghostwriting for you, right? So we're writing your book from the scratch. Now, the very first step towards going ahead and writing a book is having a book outline. You can say a book outline is a document where we write down that how many total chapters there will be, for example, 7, 8, 5, 10, depending upon the content we have. We break them down into chapters, and we provide you with chapter titles. Along with that, we also provide you with a bit of description. That is, now this is a memoir, right? So for example, it's a very vague example right now, that chapter 1 will be about childhood, chapter 2 will be about teenage, chapter 3 will be some tragedies, some problems, and then we go ahead and continue. So that's basically your book outline. That's the very first step towards creating your book. Now, the benefit of having a book outline, it's the foundation of your book. If you get the book outline right, you know what information needs to be there in each chapter. So when you have your chapter calls or when we discuss in detail about each chapter, you would know beforehand that what you're supposed to talk about, what is the aspect of your life, or what is the content that we need to discuss. You can do your homework and I can do mine, where I can prepare the questions that I want to ask you. This gives us both a roadmap to work on. And it makes the journey much more easier and I could say much more fun as well, because you are well aware at every step. You know what to expect next, and then that's how things move forward. Are there any questions, anything you'd like to know more about the book outline, anything that's unclear right now?
No, I don't know enough to ask.
So slowly and gradually, you'll know. Right now, I do want to brief you about the whole process so that you know how things will work. You should know what you should expect and how things will move forward. Now, once the book outline is done, that's when you start working on the chapters. We work on one chapter at a time so that each chapter is given enough importance. It's properly written, it's proofread, it's edited, it's gone through a complete quality check and provided to the client. When you read the chapter, you provide us with your feedback that, for example, the first page was really nice, the second page was really nice, third page, third paragraph didn't seem fine, you should change it a bit. Or maybe some information over there was a bit, you know, not correct, it was not what you had told. So we deliver you the first chapter, and then you give us your feedback. We revise it, we finalize it. Once you give us an approval, that first chapter is good to go, we move to the next chapter. We start writing it, and the same process continues, so the whole book is completed. At every step, we require your feedback. At every step, we want to work as a team, because see, it's a memoir, it's your life. We don't want to add any information, that is not right. We would want it to be as true and as close to your heart as possible. So that's how we will move forward with it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, okay. Perfect. Now that the process is clear, let's move forward to your brief form. So I received your brief form, and you discussed about your book idea. Now, to create a book outline, I need a detailed encounter, or maybe you can say detailed information. Over here, you have mentioned about this is a story of sorrow and tragedy. I want you to elaborate, what are you referring to when you talk about sorrow? What are you referring to when you talk about tragedy?
Uh-huh. Well, it's what's happened in the last 2 months that has brought me to all this way. I'm basically a fighter, and I've had sorrow all my life, and but the tragedy is just fresh and recent. Do you want me to tell you what it is?
Yes, and I really want to let you know one more thing, but this is a memoir, so it's personal. You will have to share all the information with us so that we make sure that we deliver the work that you want. So if at any moment you're uncomfortable or you want some time or, you know, you want to take a break and, you know, want to talk about it the next day, it's completely okay. We work at your pace. So don't feel pressured about anything at any moment.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So now, go ahead and tell me, you know, what happened.
All right. So I was married 46 years to a man that I didn't love, and I was pregnant when I got married, and felt like most people were telling me that I needed to stay married because of my Christian faith told me to stay married. And even though I had three Christian counselors tell me to divorce him, I thought it would be best to stay with him because of kids. And then after the kids grew up, then it was became grandkids that I would stay around. Then about 7.5 years ago, I ran into somebody that I had met many years ago, and I fell in love while I was still married. And he was madly in love with me. My husband found out about it. I thought maybe I'd tell him, and it just didn't come up and didn't come up. And I didn't have a relationship with my husband at all whatsoever. We lived in the same house, but that was about it. The grandchildren were what brought us together at that time. And the stability of a house, because I hadn't had a job up to raising children, and so I didn't have anything to fall back on. A lot of fear about branching out on my own before I met Michael. His name's Michael. And so Michael became very much more in love than I was, much more assured of his love for me. And I just finally caved. I finally said, you know, this is the best thing I've ever experienced. And I'm, how old was I? 7 years ago? I was 61, 7.5 years ago. And I'd never known anybody like him. So anyway, when my husband found out about it, of course, he wanted an immediate divorce, even though I suggested, well, we could still live together and be friends, but the marriage was over, and it had been over for 40 years. And he did not want to do that, so he divorced me, served me with papers, and I had to get out of the house. I sold or gave away 90% of my possessions. And Michael said, come live with me. I will take care of you. We'll be together forever. I love you. I will take care of you. So in the interim, before I got up here, Michael fell. He was 68 that time, single. And he fell and broke his hip, was given narcotics in the hospital, and sent his mind into a loop. I had never noticed anything really in his mental stability before. A brilliant man, an attorney. And as a matter of fact, he was the only man that's ever challenged me mentally, intellectually. And anyway, so I moved from Texas to Oklahoma to move in with him, care of him while he had his hip replaced, living with him. And he started showing signs of dementia or Alzheimer's. Also, he had been an alcoholic until I moved in with him, and I told him that I wouldn't live with an alcoholic. I wouldn't take care of a drunk. And he quit drinking. I mean, he'd have an occasional drink, but he never got drunk after I told him that I was going to leave if he did keep drinking. And his mental acuity started going downhill. So understand, all this time is he has four children, three who live very close to him. And nobody was doing anything to help him, and I was going to help him. So I started taking him to doctors. Had several procedures done. EKGs, EEGs, sleep studies. Had an ablation done on his heart where they stopped the heart and then they started back. I accompanied him to all those things. And just in the last couple of years or year, so I started noticing that there was something else going on. So I sought out an Alzheimer's doctor that worked within 15 or 20 minutes of it, which was a blessing because they're very hard to find. And I signed up for it. I paid for it. And because I hadn't asked his children about it, I just started doing it. And so I felt like I'm responsible, so I'll pay for it. So I took him to the Alzheimer's doctor. And the Alzheimer's doctor says he's going too rapidly into dementia. There's got to be something environmental going on. Michael's tight with the buck. And he had a bathroom that needed to be repaired, and he just wouldn't do it and wouldn't do it and wouldn't do it. And when I told the doctor that I thought there was some black mold in the house, she said, "Oh, my gosh, black mold has a radical effect on Alzheimer's." So I find somebody, I tell his children, and I think they're as tight as he is, and they said, "Well, you're going to have to find a mold eradicator." So I did, and I contracted them and was willing to pay for it all, and did initially. And they, now this is a wealthy man, as far as I know. I'm still not. But I felt like since everybody was being so tight with the buck, I would put the bill. And I did. And the mold guy came out and said, "Yeah, you got a lot of mold." And his daughter said, "Well, we don't need to do the whole house. Let's just do a piece of the house." And we got in an argument about that. And why wouldn't you do the whole house? It's his money. And they said, "Well, we'll take it from here." So they paid for the initial fogging of the house and only half the house. And I paid. I came out and I paid. He said, "I can do the whole house for just $800 more. And you get a promise that we'll come back and test the house as often as it needs and refog as often as it needs to get rid of the mold." And I said, "Okay, I'll pay $800 to do that." Ended up paying like $960. But the whole process was very difficult. They wanted control. They kept telling him he doesn't have, "I don't own the house, but I live there." And I would tell him that, "Well, I live here, so I'm asking you to do that, not only for Michael, but for me." And the evening that it was fogged was really, really not a fun night. It just kept getting worse. So after it got fogged, I can tell you more details about that because the details are really what makes this so tragic. Well, after that, we get rid of the mold. Then I send a urine specimen into him, I freeze his urine and put it in a packaging to have it tested for the mold because that's what this Alzheimer unit or the doctor, clinician or doctor, she's a doctor, said was, well, we need to test him if he's sensitive to mold. And this was after the fogging, and sure enough, he is sensitive to mold, and it does affect the brain. Anyway, so after that, after all that, and they found out, of course, they went to the Alzheimer's clinic or shop, whatever, office, and told, and then slapped down a piece of paper that said I did not have power, medical power of attorney, so I was not to get access to any of his medical records. And they and the children, after a year of doing all these things, they came to me and said, we're not going to let you go to any more doctor's appointments with him. We're taking over. Which they then went to the Alzheimer's office, doctor's office, and canceled the program that I had him in. In the meantime, I felt like he had a urinary tract infection, which he had probably had for years, and it was just hidden. Because they do hide. They hide in older people. And one night he showed radical signs of dementia, not just Alzheimer's, but just craziness, seeing things and acting very radical. And I said, he has a UTI. And they go, well, the doctors, I'd taken him to the doctor, and his son had taken him to the doctors or the emergency room. I took him to the doctors. They didn't find it. And it's only because you have to culture a UTI in older patients, and they wouldn't culture it. So then they went to the emergency room, had another test done, didn't come back with a UTI. But as I said, you have to culture it. So I said to his son that night when he was outside going around, checking the car, just acting really crazy, wondering what this part of the car was. And this was like after dark. And I looked at his son and I said, you have to do something. You have medical power of attorney. You have to do something. And I literally was jumping up and down saying, you must do something now. And he goes, well, what would you have me do? The doctors say he doesn't have a UTI. I said, yes, he does. Yes, he does. And I said, I'd stake my life on it. And so they took him to the doctor's office the next morning. He goes, what would you have me do? I said, take him to the doctor's office tomorrow morning, first thing, make sure that he's the first appointment in to see his doctor. And his doctor's an old friend, so they made way for him to come in and get blood work done. Got the blood work back about an hour later after he'd come home. And his son calls me and said, the doctor thinks he's in sepsis. And, of course, I knew it wasn't a surprise to me. And so we had to go to the hospital and be admitted to the hospital. All his children are busy. So I take him to the hospital and get him admitted. I stay with him for 3 days. He's on IVs. And one of the doctors on call gave him a schizophrenic drug, which works just the opposite with him as it would with me, just made him even crazier. And anyway, so we struggled through that. That was a very, they had to strap him down. It was horrific. Pulled his own IV out 8 times one night. Anyway, you get released, come home. 5 days after he's out of the hospital, I said, the symptoms are coming back. Now, this is a man with Alzheimer's. So unless you're there, you can't really see those things happening. Unless you're with him, you don't know that this is what's going on. And I call his doctor and I said, his symptoms are coming back. And so I get some antibiotics. The doctor prescribes antibiotics. He takes those antibiotics. As soon as they're gone, 5 days after they're gone, I call the doctor back and I said, his symptoms are coming back. And the doctor then won't talk to me because I don't have medical power of attorney. So I was desperate to get something to help him. So I went online and got the same kind of antibiotic that my mother, my 99-and-a-half-year-old mother, takes for her UTIs, and started giving it to him. And he started getting better. But before that, I guess right before that, when I told the doctor that his symptoms were still there, he said, well, let's go catheterize him, which I had been begging for him to be catheterized. Well, they did an ultrasound before that, and the doctor came back and told his children, who they don't tell me any of the results of his doctor's visits anymore. I'm not allowed to go anymore. And his daughter calls me and says, are you sitting down? And I wasn't, but I said, yes, I am. And she said, you've been right all the time. He has a UTI. He needs to go to the emergency room and get catheterized. Well, he got catheterized. And I changed out the catheter, the bag at the bottom of his leg for a week or so. And he and his children, and it's very much more detailed than this, but he and his children, daughter came from California. They took him to get the catheter out. All three of his, all but one child showed up at the doctor's office. And I, again, was not allowed to go in to discuss what I had been experiencing with him. And they came out and left the catheter in. They said, we need to leave it in a little bit longer. By the next morning, he was in such pain with just the catheter. He wanted it out, he wanted it out, he wanted it out. His daughter had called that night before and said, I want to have breakfast with you, Dad. And he said, well, Sarah goes with us. And he goes, oh, Dad, I just want to have, you understand. And she texted me and she said, this isn't anything personal. I would just like to have breakfast with Dad. And of course that Michael was resistant, but then of course he wants to make his kids happy, but he wanted me to go with him. I didn't go with him. They came and picked him up and they said they were going to go have the catheter removed and go to breakfast and come home. I waited until 4 o'clock, knowing something was wrong. I spent my time weeding the flower beds in the back and checking the front of the house and calling the kids, saying, where are you? What's going on? And then his daughter, one of his daughters that actually communicates with me, called me and said, I need you to breathe right now. And I said, I'm not going to see him ever again, am I? And she said, you will. And they promised that they were going to bring him home, that he was just at this Alzheimer's memory care unit for just a little while they fixed the bathroom. I said, well, we could have gone to a bed and breakfast. A B&B. You didn't have to put him in an Alzheimer's unit, a memory care unit. And he'll be home. He'll be home. Is what they told me. 5 days after that, They came and kicked me out of the house and told me I had 2 weeks to get everything I had out of the house. And then I would get to see him. You get out, and we'll make arrangements for you to see him. I did everything in my power to help that man. I turned down jobs. I have another job that is contract work that I do that I can pick and choose the things I do. And so I was turning down work because he really needed me at home. So I hadn't really, I didn't work much except for my part-time contract stuff. I'm a tennis official for a Division I university tennis, and so it's seasonal. So anyway, as of today, I have not seen him. They've become very hostile towards me, so that when I ask, or if I call up to the unit and ask if I can talk to him, the kids are told that I've called, and they email or text me and said, if you don't stop trying to see him, we will take legal action against you. I've tried to hire an attorney, but I think the attorney thinks that there's no luck in it, or no, you know, waste of money. I know where he is. In my gut, and found where he is. Just found it, really, on my own. I know the room he's in. And anyway, I haven't seen him since. I know what Alzheimer's does to people. And I know the very best place for Alzheimer's patients, especially when he wasn't even that far gone. He had sepsis symptoms, and he had to get out of the sepsis. And yes, he did have some Alzheimer's, but he was lucid most of the time. But to be in a home like that really causes a downward spiral. He trusted me. His son was jealous of me because the love Michael has for me. He told me he loved me more than anything in the universe. He told me he was scared. He told me, don't ever leave me. You can't ever leave me. So here I am today. Of course, with all that, I couldn't rent an apartment or a house or anything, even though I had some money, because I don't show income during these last few months of not working. I don't show income in my bank account, so I'm unable to rent anything. So I literally was thrown out on the street. I did find somewhere to be with a friend. She said she'd give me 60 days. So that's a really just good overview. There's been a whole lot more. I start back with my youth and how my mother was jealous of me and my father was a philanderer, and all about during the divorce how two of my three sons decided not to speak to me anymore. So, I mean, there's a lot more than that. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, the information and the life story that you have shared with us right now. I don't know how strong of a woman you are that you were able to survive something like this, because it definitely is very tragic and painful to go through all of that. And you're a strong woman. That's something that I will definitely say. And when you're referring to the details, so right now, when we're writing the book outline is very brief, okay? It will probably, like, for example, when we write chapter one, it will only have 2-3 lines. But once you approve the outline and we move to the first chapter, that's when all the details are required, you know, every tiny detail, so that your chapter can be in-depth and have all the information. I do have a question for you. Right now you mentioned the name of Michael, okay, and then it's your name as well, Sarah. So do you want to use real names in the book, or do you want to use pseudo or pen names?
Oh, I could use his real first name. I'm not too sure I'd use his last name. But...
All right. So right for now, what we'll do is we'll use the first name as Michael, and we'll create a pseudo for the, you know, surname. And if, for example, down the lane, when you're reading the whole book, final approval, if you feel you want to change the name or you want to have the complete full name, then at that moment as well, it can be changed. That's not an issue. The second question I have for you is that you spoke about Alzheimer's and dementia. Now, a lot of people do know about what it is, but do you want to give a detailed account or maybe, you know, a paragraph explaining what these things are when we introduce this particular aspect of your life in the book? Do you want to go ahead and discuss about these things as well so that people or the readers who are reading it do know what it is and, you know, they get to know the details of it?
Oh, I think Alzheimer's is on the rise.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one of the attractive aspects of the book would be that it was a it was actually dealing with Alzheimer's, so and trying to understand Alzheimer's.
All right, got it. So perfect. We'll move forward that way. The information that you shared with me, my team and I will work on it, and we will go ahead and create the book outline for you. In the next couple of days, we share it with you. Once you review it, you can let us know about your feedback. You do know that I work the graveyard shift, as I work at the night. So you and I will be communicating, you know, can say once a week. Rest of your communication regarding the deliveries, the time frame, and everything will be with your project manager. He's basically a bridge of communication between me and you. For example, when I'm working on your draft and I have any questions, I will let him know, and he will ask you those questions and provide me with the answers. But it's, you know, just to make sure that you're comfortable and, you know, we're working in the right direction. I can make an exception, and we can talk once a week or once in 10 days to ensure that the work is going properly and you and I can connect and take things forward. Will that be okay with you?
So you say you and I would speak once a week?
Yes. But your constant communication regarding the work, for example, if you want to know when you're receiving the chapter or, you know, how many days more or what's the status of the project or something like that. For those things, you will be in communication with your project manager. But once a week, I will talk to you where we will discuss about the book, we will discuss about the content, how we're taking things forward, what is the information I need from your end, what's your feedback, how do you think your chapter or the book outline is. So that's the call you're going to have with me.
Okay.
Are you comfortable with that?
What about the details before all the major stuff that's happened in the last 7 years or so?
Okay. See, when I deliver the book outline to you, you will review it and provide me with your feedback. Now, when you provide me with your feedback, you will probably email and then you'll schedule a call and I'll be over there. You'll tell me about the feedback, and on that particular day, we'll discuss about the first chapter as well. So when we discuss about the first chapter, at that time, I will be asking you questions and I would require all the detailed information, you know, every tiny bit of it, so that I can then go ahead and write the chapter for you. Then my team and I will work on the chapter, and once it's done, your project manager will deliver it to you, You can review it once you're ready with your feedback. You can let us know. We'll schedule a call. You let me know about your feedback, and we take things forward. Is that okay?
Yes, what was your name?
Rachel.
Rachel. And you've written books?
Can you please repeat?
I said, and you have written books?
Yes, I have numerous ones. Yeah.
Do you guys use AI?
What do we use?
Do you use AI?
No, we don't. Because, see, when we're writing a memoir, it needs to be heartfelt. AI is artificial intelligence.
Okay.
It's not emotional intelligence. So how will you add the emotion or the fear? Yeah.
That's good. I didn't want to use AI.
Correct. See, if you wanted to use AI, you wouldn't need to hire me. You know, it would automatically open up a website and do it on your own. You want professional work.
Oh, yeah.
That's why you've hired us, and we're here to support you, so don't worry.
Okay. What do you think, just from an overview of what I've told you,
mm-hmm.
what do you think what is this going to generate? What do you think this will do? I mean, what do you think this book, I mean, it's not a happy story, it's a love story, but
mm-hmm.
it doesn't have a happy ending, at least not right now.
See,
so,
when we talk about a love story, and then the tragedies. Happy endings are for fiction books or for fairy tales. In real life, you do know that happy endings do not really exist. So a book that touches with reality, a book that people can relate to, is, if you talk about the market, is a hot selling item. It's just that you need to make sure that while you're working on the book, you're using the right marketing tools as well to market your book. Because when you use the correct marketing tools, you promote the book in the best way, you get the right audience, and you make a huge ton of fortune with the book as well.
Mm-hmm. Did you say it's a hard selling or a hot selling?
Hot selling. No, it's a hot selling. That is, people prefer.
Uh-huh.
All right, Sarah.
Well,
so,
it's a good story. I mean, I was going to say there's a lot more in the first three chapters, or, you know, if it's a seven-chapter book. Anyway, there's lots more in the middle. I just told you the very end. So.
No, I completely understand. And see, it's a memoir, so there will be much more detail and much more in-depth work in it as well. And while we work on it, we'll get to know more about it. And, you know, I always tell my clients that when I'm working on their book, especially if it's a memoir, we build a good relationship. And, you know, it's a long-term relationship that we are working on.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry I haven't talked to you before.
No, problem at all, and I completely understand. It's okay. Now I'm here, and I will stay in touch with you, and we'll work on everything together.
Where do you live?
Where do I live? California? Where do you live?
Really? I live in Texas.
Uh-huh. So how's the weather there?
Well, I don't live. I don't have any place that I'm living. I am staying in Texas.
Okay. Yes.
How's the weather here? It's going to be 106 today.
Oh. Well, we will stay connected, and you know, you can tell me much more about where you're staying and how things are, and you know, we'll be more like friends when we're working together.
Okay. I also work the grave shift because I'm not sleeping. So, you know, if you want to call while you're awake at night while you're awake, I'm available. I get about 4 hours sleep a night right now.
Sure, sure. See, whenever we schedule a call, we will schedule according to your feasibility. So don't worry about it. And if at night I have any questions, I will definitely, you know, call you and ask you or text you.
Yeah, you can just call me.
Sure, sure. I'll definitely. Sure, sure. I'll definitely do that.
Okay.
It was lovely talking to you, and I look forward to having a long business relationship. I really want to work with you as a client on this book, so let's hope things go in much, you know, a better way, and we move forward from here.
So you think this has got a chance?
Well, definitely. Talking from personal experience, yes. Because, see, as I told you, happy endings are a fairy tale. Something that people can relate to, something that people can feel that, yes, this has value, automatically that has a chance in the market. It becomes a hot-selling item. People love it. So, yes, but I will definitely tell you that you should, you know, once you are in the writing phase, you are through with the first chapter or the second chapter, you should start working on, you know, marketing your book in the right direction and sticking it forward as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, everybody has told me all my life that I need to write my story because it's, even before this happened, I got lots of stories. Lots of stories.
We'll see. One should always write.
Okay. Okay.
Perfect. Perfect. So I'll let Samantha know about our call, and probably she'll give you a follow-up call, or, you know, she'll take care from here, okay?
Okay. Thanks, Rachel.
No problem, Sarah. Thank you so much. Take care.
Okay.